entered Atmani unto the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, who is known as Vasudev. Mana, mind, dadat, concentrating, dvasta, vanquished, guna pravaha, the waves of the material modes of nature. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarish, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudev. Please repeat. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarish, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudev. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As a pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarish was liberated in any condition of life because, as enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami, a devotee is always liberated. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasagira nikilashvapyavastasu jivan mukta sauchite. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami thus instructs that if one's only desire is service to the Lord, he is liberated in any condition of life. Maharaj Ambarish was undoubtedly liberated in any condition, but as an ideal king, he accepted the Vanaprastha order of retirement from family life. It is essential for one to renounce family responsibilities and fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudev. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish divided the kingdom among his sons and retired from family life. First again, Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarish, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudev. So in this verse, we're getting near the end of the pastime of the confrontation between Dhruva Maharaj, Durvasa Muni and Ambarish. And in this chapter, we've been reading about how Ambarish has been praying to the Lord to save Durvasa Muni. Lord Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra could easily have killed him, but he prayed so many beautiful prayers asking that his life be spared. So now after this whole pastime, in the verse we're understanding that Maharaj Ambarish, he was such a pure devotee. He was such an exemplary leader. And yet it's described that he's no longer desiring to live the material things. And therefore, he's retiring. And this concept of retirement is there in our society, but it's completely different concept. Typically, when we think of retirement, we gather enough money that we can live the rest of our life peacefully, cover our expenses, perhaps medical expenses or whatever may come along, and then we retire. And this is exactly the opposite. He's giving away all his wealth to his sons. He's giving away his kingdom. He's going to the forest with nothing. Actually, it doesn't say here that he's going with his wife, but it's understood that in Vanaprastha, that order of life, the husband and wife are still, they're renouncing together. But he's leaving, the idea is you're leaving your business behind, you're leaving your wealth, everything to the next generation, and then you can be free to fully concentrate on spirituality, chanting Hare Krishna without any distractions. So I wanted to discuss this idea of Vanaprastha a bit by first looking at how it's described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam. In the story of Magori the Hunter, Narada Muni when that pastime happened and he stopped Magori from half-killing animals and opened his eyes to spiritual life, to Krishna consciousness, then Narada Muni had instructed Magori to return home, distribute whatever riches you have to the pure brahmanas who know the absolute truth. After you have distributed all your riches to the brahmanas, you and your wife should leave home, each of you taking only one cloth to wear. So that was a verse from, actually I have it quoted in Madhya Leela. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, this is the process of renunciation at the stage of Vanaprastha. After enjoying household or life for some time, the husband and wife must leave home and distribute their riches to brahmanas and Vaishnavas. One can keep his wife as an assistant in the Vanaprastha stage. The idea is that the wife will assist the husband in spiritual advancement. Therefore, Narada Muni advised the hunter to adopt the Vanaprastha stage and leave home. It's not that a grihastha should live at home until he dies. Vanaprastha is preliminary to sannyas. In the Krishna consciousness movement, there are many young couples engaged in the Lord's service. Eventually, they are supposed to take Vanaprastha, and after the Vanaprastha stage, the husband may take sannyas in order to preach. The wife may then remain alone and serve the deity or engage in other activities within the Krishna consciousness movement. So here's a very clear instruction that Prabhupada expects us to fully embrace the system: brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. And I would say that we haven't really fully embraced this, maybe because we're getting older now and we're getting to the age we have to think about this. I know that because I've just been away for the last 2 weeks at a very glorious event, which is my son's wedding, and from the wedding, which was in North Carolina, my husband went to India. And driving back here, I was definitely thinking about, this is like the age, Vanaprastha. Our son's married, he's taken care of. My husband's gone to India. We're okay. I go to India part of the year. He goes to India a different part of the year. You know, like, this is the time to start thinking about Vanaprastha. But where are our examples? There aren't any. I mean, if there are some, it's so rare and so... Well, it's certainly not the way Prabhupada's describing or the way the Bhagavatam's describing, that the people are giving away their wealth and going to the forest to live. I mean, that's definitely not happening. And it's not even feasible in this day and age or in this culture. I mean, what forest could we go to, even if we wanted to? But still, the idea of retirement in the sense of, you know, letting go of our encumbrances so that we can more fully engage in Krishna consciousness. And considering that this community already has a reputation of the retirement mode, which we don't really, I don't necessarily say it's true, but I mean, if you travel outside the community, there's this perception. And if we want to dispel the perception, you know, what we need to do is, you know, take it up one level of Krishna consciousness and And I really think that in many ways, our community, being the largest community in North America, perhaps in the world, that we already are an example. And so we should consider, like, what kind of example do we want this community to be? Do we want it to be really exemplary? Like, we're fully participating in whatever ashram we're in an exemplary way? I mean, or do we, you know, do we want to, you know, just... If we don't make a decision that we're going to be exemplary, then it could just be whatever happens. And the whatever happens, unfortunately, is that what we're seeing is grihasthas are not exemplary grihasthas. Marriages fall apart, and this is like the worst case scenario. So since and the purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about how a devotee is liberated, like Maharaj Ambarish, in any phase of life that he was in, he was liberated. But again, you know, Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing in the purport how he accepted Vanaprastha, how it's essential for one to renounce family responsibilities, fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudeva. But, you know, since this is a grihastha community, I think it's essential for us to look at what it really means to be a good grihastha, so that when it really is time for us to retire, that perhaps we can establish what it means to be a vanaprastha. So let's just, since I was mentioning a divorce, like this is actually the worst case scenario. When couples get divorced in a community, it not only impacts that couple, perhaps their children, if they have children, it definitely impacts their children, but it really impacts the entire community. At my son's wedding, we had the most wonderful lecture by Partha Prabhu from Sharanagati Farm in Canada. He's one of the devotees on the Grihastha Vision team. And his talk was like, it was like a pep talk for grihasthas, in a sense of, he just brought up so many wonderful points. And one of the points about divorce was how it actually rips apart the fabric of a community. So if we think of community as, you know, people who are connected, like fabric is woven together, and our lives are woven together. We're in the, you know, practicing Krishna consciousness together, we're giving our association to others, we're taking association and getting inspired. And when couples get divorced, it's rips apart that fabric. And like when I think about people who have broken up, it's like a pain in my heart. Well, the thing is to question, like, how can we avoid this? You know, how can we have a society, have a community that is so supportive to each other that this kind of thing is, you know, it's dealt with before it gets to that point. Of course, the first thing is to really emphasize what it means to take a vow. Because just like our initiation vows, we're saying, giving our word that we are going to follow the four regular principles. We're going to chant at least 16 rounds every day. We're saying that in front of our guru, in front of the deities, in front of all the Vaishnavas. It's a very serious thing. It's we're not saying it whimsically. And it's the same thing. I was hearing, you know, the marriage vows. I mean, they're making a very clear commitment to serve as a grihastha couple. They're serving each other, and there's just no back door. There's a concept in marriage counseling that I've heard about. It's like throw away the back door key, which means divorce is going out the back door, escaping from the relationship. And if you lock that back door and throw away the key, then you never go there. You never in your mind think, okay, I can get out of this relationship by leaving, by breaking up. So if that concept isn't there, then there's, you know, more emphasis on and getting strength within the relationship and working things out. Actually, one of the points in the lecture was so nice. Because Partha is from Canada, yet he was quoting from the American Constitution. There's that phrase, that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And he was discussing that this right to the pursuit of happiness, there's a distinction between that and the right to happiness. We have the right to pursue happiness. So that's, you know, in a marriage, sometimes we may be thinking we have the right to be happy. And if I'm not happy, then I'm out of here, that kind of mentality. But we don't really have the right to be happy, the right to pursue it. That's the concept. We can pursue happiness. Maybe it comes, maybe it doesn't. You know, in life there's ups and downs. If it wasn't ups and downs, it'd be flatline, and flatline means death. So we have to accept that there's ups and downs. That's fine. So anyway, I'm always requesting that we get things started in this community, and I know that we already have devotees who are part of the Grihastha Vision team in our community, Montrini and Tamaharpavus. So, and there's as many others who are very committed to the Grihastha Ashram being successful. So maybe we can set up a local branch so that when couples are in distress, that there's a very clear path that everybody knows, that there's these devotees who are there for you and can help work things out. There's so many facilities in the material world. There's, you know, like counseling and things that used to be taboo within ISKCON, and now we've realized that we need all the help we can get, and, you know, why not use these types of facilities? So there's many devotees who are trained up to help other devotees. Last year there was an effort to start small groups within this community based more or less on the Chopadi example. It didn't really fully get embodied or get off the ground because the mentor groups, that's the Chopadi example, but in our community we have so many senior devotees that we really needed peer groups, you know, devotees who are seeing each other as equal, and that's a new concept. So we never really fully worked it out how to get that started. Still should happen. It's still a very wonderful tool because it makes devotees feel connected. In such a large community, many devotees feel like they don't know where they fit in, they don't know where they have service, they don't feel like they have other devotees that they can be close to. So small groups creates that. It's not an artificial thing. Actually, Christian churches have been doing this for years and actually give us a good example of how to do it. There's books written and so on, but implementing it is a challenge. But anyway, to get back to some wonderful points of the idea of strong families and strong community. Partha Prabhu gave this example, and I'm not sure if I'm going to say it correctly, but he was talking about how sometimes in marriage there's abrasive, there's like two abrasive surfaces. maybe Adidev, you can help me with this example, because I understood that he was saying that in order, in a bond, to create a bond, like if you want to glue two things together, you actually use abrasive surfaces like sandpaper or a pumice stone or something like that to sand down the two sides. And when they're nicely sanded down, then when you put the glue together in there, the two pieces actually stick together very nicely. So, yeah, I'm saying it wrong, right? There was more to the example.
Right? Well, he asked if anybody in the room was a carpenter, you know. Raise your hand. Yeah. And then he said, well, in order to get a joint together, you need a couple of different things. You need, you know, two pieces of wood and you need a glue. So he was likening, he was sort of talking in stages, and he said, when couples get married, generally they're kind of like two polished pieces of wood. that there's the honeymoon stage where everything's just lovely, you know. Everybody gets along, and it's just kind of, you know, this sort of a glowy, you know, feel-good, fuzzy-wuzzy, you know, situation. But then another stage manifests, which is a little more mature, where the one party begins to notice, oh, there's these sort of rough edges to the other person. And the other person begins to know, oh, well, there's some rough edges over there on the other side, too. But he was saying that that's actually good, because that's who we are. I mean, we're just letting down our shield and letting other people into our lives, and, you know, none of us are perfect, otherwise we wouldn't be here. And so he was saying that actually it's good to have those rough edges, because that makes a stronger bond. You know, if you have smooth edges or smooth surfaces, you're not going to get as good a bond. And so it's, you know, just a way of looking at marriage in a more mature way, I think. And that glue, I think, was like the well wishes of each party for the well-being of the other. That was the bond. That was the compassion, you know, for the other person, and the encouragement to the other person. That's what I got.
Thank you. He also did a very interesting thing. He was asking the assembly of devotees who was engaged to get married. Is there anybody here who's engaged to get married right now? No. But are there, okay, those of you who are married, who has, raise your hand if you've been married between 1 and 5 years. Is there anybody in that category? No. Okay, 5 to 10 years? Who's been married 5 to 10 years? A few hands are going up. All right, great. And how about 10 to 15 years? Anybody in that category? Just a few hands, more hands, yes. Very good. How about 15 to 20 years? Oh, more hands. Very good. 15 to 20 years. How about 20 to 25 years? Whoa, some more hands. 20 to 25 years. 25 to 30 years? Anybody in that category? Yes? Yes, great. What was that? 25 to 30, right? Okay, 30 to 35. Yeah, a few more hands. Anybody been married more than 35 years? Radha Damodar. And hi, Paul. How many years have you been married? 36? 36 years. Awesome. That's really wonderful. I just want to acknowledge you for being married for the longest of anyone in this room. There may be others in the community, possibly longer. At my son's wedding, I was very pleased to see that my brother and his wife were the ones who had been married the longer than anyone, 47 years. They got married when they were 19 years old. And, you know, never had any other relationship. And so, all of these long-term relationships, I mean, I really want to acknowledge you, and we really should be acknowledging each other for being great examples. People may not know that we have wonderful examples of strong families. And this is the basis of a society, because 95% of society in general is are grihasthas, they're married. Okay, in Krishna consciousness, we're not grihamedis, and maybe in the material world, there are a lot of grihamedis. But in any case, marriage as an institution is very prominent. And especially in this community. This is a predominantly grihastha community. So one of the points that Partha Prabhu made was when the family unit is strong, society is strong. When it breaks down, when families break apart, when families are not valued, then we've seen in history whole societies fall apart. So this is really essential that we live, good grihastha lives and support each other. Let me just see if there was... I wanted to read what Srila Prabhupada said about divorce. This is a new concept, divorce. It did not exist in the Vedic culture. In fact, I remember when I was living in Mayapur and I got the privilege of serving Prabhupada's sister, Pishima, and I was trying to explain this concept to her. There was no words for her to understand. Not that it was easy to communicate with her because she spoke only Bengali, but I could see that it was just a word, it wasn't in her vocabulary. She didn't know the word divorce. Prabhupada said in a conversation in Montreal in 1968, in the Vedic understanding, there is no divorce. If the wife is not very pleasing, there is no question of divorcing. Chanaka Pandit does not advise it, the advice that he should divorce such wife, but he says he should give up family life and go to the forest. Divorce was completely unknown, even up to, say, 5 years ago. Now this Nehru government has enacted Divorce Act, but actually they have no such thing as divorce. So that's interesting that Prabhupada's saying if you don't want to live with a wife, if it's not pleasing, then he's basically describing vanaprastha, go to the forest. So he's really not giving us divorce as an option yet. Even when Prabhupada was on the planet, couples were breaking up, and he was very displeased with this. And he, at one point, he stopped doing marriages, saying that he was... Well, the word I think of is disgusted, but I'm not sure if that's an exact quote. But that's definitely how I understood that Prabhupada was disgusted with his disciples who could not keep their commitments in a marriage vow. So I think it's really important for us to, again, look at how we as a community can help young couples. Just here in this community, we had, what, 4 marriages in the last few months? And we want every couple to be exemplary. We really, I don't know how to say it without just repeating what I've been saying already. Just, it's up to us to figure out, you know, as a group of intelligent people who are committed to Christian consciousness, it's up to us to figure out how to make this work, how to be a really, truly exemplary community in every way. And since it's predominantly grihasthas, it's up to us to figure out how we can be an exemplary grihastha community. So that's everything I have to say. I would definitely like to hear feedback from all of you. Thank you. Sukhita Prabhu.
And of course, the main reason for wanting to, I mean, really, for the marriage sticking together, the main point is the children, and that when there's separation, what it actually does to the children. So that, I think, is really the more the glue that binds, is the idea that, you know, you have this commitment to the children. I know in my generation with my parents never got divorced, and even though, you know, they definitely had arguments and didn't always get along perfectly. But the idea is that, you know, you stay together and you see that parents who stay together, then their children are more likely to stay together and their children are more likely to stay together. And divorced relationships, then the children are also more likely to become divorced. I also just wanted to put in a plug for the Lachana community in the sense that it's not practical. Like you said, what forest are we going to go to? And the idea is that a lot of people moved here just for devotee association, you know, younger couples, older couples, and really are, you know, part of the vanaprastha, you know, devotees are coming to the temple, they're worshiping the deities, they're addressing the deities, they're doing, you know, they're preaching, they're doing so much service. So that is one way that we can, you know, do vanaprastha, really, is just by increasing our service. And I think you do see that with a lot of devotees as they get older. yeah, and their family responsibilities are waning, that they're just trying to increase their service internally and externally.
Thank you for that. I just want to say something about children, because like, if we have the proper vision, like you're saying, that children are the glue, the binding together of the couple, that's great. But if we put our own sense gratification first, then it will definitely distract us from seeing that the children are important. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is the problem in society, that if we're thinking that marriage is for sense gratification, even in the Vedas it's talking about it's a license for sense gratification, then the children, if they're not respected, fully respected, then what can happen is the couple, it's like they just see it as a collateral damage or something. Okay, well, the children are going to suffer. What can I do? I need my own satisfaction to be there. And doesn't that come up in marriages? When we see couples breaking up, they feel sorry that their children are going to suffer, but they're going to do it anyway. Instead of, okay, I have to stay together because my children are going to suffer otherwise. Yeah.
Well, even with sense gratification, it's like, it's wonderful sense gratification when you see your children. Yeah, it's a form, right? Your children are happy, they're successful, they're, you know, it's like so satisfying. So I think if, you know, everyone had their little crystal ball and they were really able to look into the future and look at the statistics of what happens with children in families where there's divorce, they really might think about it again. They might take a second thought. And I think that's part of the problem, is that, you know, there's so many philosophies. Well, it's better for me to get divorced because the kids are seeing so much strife. But actually, that was the study they did back in the 70s. They actually followed children in divorced families, and they watched and saw, well, what happened to them. Because back then, the philosophy was, if there's too much difficulty, better to get divorced. But then they interviewed these children of divorced families, even in their 30s, and they were still suffering. 30-year-old children, you know, they were still like the effects of the divorce. So then they changed. Actually, no, it's better not to. It's better to try to work it out. So, you know, that's the idea, is that you stick together, and that it brings so much happiness. I mean, for anybody whose children are suffering, whether you're divorced or not divorced, it's so painful. It's so painful. Yeah. So for every reason, it's better to stay together if it's going to help your children. It's better for them. It's better for you.
Of course, there's exceptions like abuse, right?
But
otherwise, yeah. Thank you. And also, I was thinking about the word parent. You know, it means both mother and father. And so I know when my parents got divorced, I mean, I was 19, but it just didn't even make sense. Like, I say the word parents, but, you know, they were in other relationships, or at least my dad was, and, you know, it's a word that you know, it's both. It's, anyway, the idea that, thank you for the idea of emphasizing, you know, bringing up children. This is our real duty as grihasthas, to raise healthy, normal, successful children. Ananda Manjari, you had your hand up.
Hare Krishna. I was really excited about today's lecture. So two main things come to mind. We hear a lot nowadays about being present and be here now, and this whole motivational speaking mood. And I'm thinking, I think that's a really important aspect in any relationship, especially in a grihastha relationship. Noticing where you are, noticing your own shortcomings, noticing that this is the commitment you made at this moment. For those that are brahmachari, being in that stage, fully embracing that, fully embracing the joy the real pleasure from being brahmachari, from being brahmacharini, and in grihastha life, fully embracing that as well, and noticing and embracing that, being present in that, in a serving mood. And we hear that all the time, but truly noticing that this person came into my life as a gift, and let me value that gift. Let me value this partnership, because that's what I see my marriage as. I was fortunate enough to get a partner in this journey, and so not taking that partner for granted, being grateful every single day. You know, thank you, Radha Shama Sundar, and I thank Radha Murlidhar in New York. Thank you so much for this wonderful partner that's in my life. And there was another point in terms of gratitude. Some people have said to me, "Well, don't announce your joy about your partner. Like keep it secret. Like you keep your japa secret and your mantra secret." I've read this in the scriptures before about keeping your mantra secret. But for me, I want to glorify my partner's wonderful qualities. Because by me glorifying this wonderful Vaishnava, then it inspires me to further serve. It inspires me to emulate this wonderful personality. And then I can see these wonderful attributes in other people. Oh, I can see how they serve together so nicely, how they change Prabhupada's clothes together, how they go on book distribution together. And if we see that more and more in others, we'll see that more and more in our own partner, and want to engage and be excited about this wonderful life, continue to be present to that, so that when this stage is over, we can fully let go and not think, oh, I missed out. I wish I'd had more children, all these things. But think, oh, those were wonderful years that really trained me for this next level of devotional service.
Thank you. What mantra is secret? Maha mantra we give out to everybody.
Yes, Maha mantra secret, but it said that you keep your Ishtadev to yourself. You keep your mantra to, like, you don't boast about those things.
Oh, I see. Not the Maha mantra.
Not the
Maha. Okay. Thank you. All right, thank you very much. That was great. That was how to appreciate each other. By the way, if anybody who stays to the very end of class, I have some sweets to distribute to you for my son's wedding. So, but Seal, you too. It'll be the last. What time is it? Is it open? Is that grihastha group open to other people, or is it limited number?
Right now, we'll soon be completing our commitment that we made for 1 year.
I see.
And then others it'll be open for others to join in.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so.
They're wonderful material, wonderful handouts, and it's great to have that support.
Great. Yeah. Okay, the grihastha support system.
Hi, Krishna. This is a very important discussion, and I'm sure it can go on a lot longer, but I just wanted to mention that we have the advantage as devotees that we know that not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord, and how Krishna's personally helping us on our journey back to Him. So I think we need to be able to view our marriage in the same way, that there's a reason that Krishna directed us to a certain partner. There are certain lessons we need to learn. I like the idea of, and I believe this was the glue that Partha mentioned, is valuing your partner instead of trying to look for the flaws. Try to look for, you know, the positive things, because what you focus on expands. But I think we also, it's important to realize, just as it says in Bhagavad Gita, that as the air carries aromas, it's not just into the next body, but it's also into our next experience. So if we think that we're going to be able to leave one partner and go to the next, the lesson will follow us that we need to learn. And we've been discussing the ramifications of such a decision, but the internal journey is so important to realize that Krishna is the controller. He's setting up a situation for a reason. It's to help us become detached and to help us become desirous of going back to him and serving him. And if we keep the spiritual focus, I believe you were mentioning that there was a group of grahasas that the ones that had good marriages, they were mentioning that how they see this, that Krishna must have put me together with this partner for a reason. Yeah. And I think that's a nice vision to have.
Yeah, there was a Grihastha, yeah, thank you. There, you mentioned the Grihastha panel here years ago. Four or five couples who had been married a long time, and they were answering the question like, what worked? What makes them stay together? And the thing that I remember most was devotee saying, I felt like Krishna arranged the marriage. I mean, you could always look at things in a spiritual way and in a material way. Say, oh, well, so-and-so made, you know, they connected me or whatever. But if we see it as Krishna who directed us to this particular person, and this is, there are lessons to be learned, and if we don't learn them in this life, we may have to come back again and learn them in the next life. So to avoid that, since our goal is to go back to Godhead and complete everything, so here's an opportunity. Thank you. Yeah, I do feel like this is an important discussion that should go on. I'm always feeling like there's practical aspects of the Bhagavatam that, you know, we could be talking about perhaps in other venues, perhaps as to Gosties, or just even among ourselves. So I hope we can keep the conversation going about how to become an exemplary Grihastha community, so that someday we will figure out how to do Vanaprastha. Thank you all very much. Please come and get some prasadam. Okay, salty or sweet? I have both. You want both? I don't know if I got as many salty. The salty are hot, I could tell you. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Who made them, the devotees?
No. This is from a sweet shop, but it's prasadam. Okay. All right. I got to get more here. Here's more. You like salty? Because these are a little hot, so I can't, the kids are not going to like them. And lots more. Okay. Salty? Okay, sure.